The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of bin misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deake speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP, I'm Charlie Clawson, and I'm here to introduce another compilation episode. We're taking another week off the show, but that doesn't mean you're without TOEFOP content, because Podcast Mike has compiled some highlights from the show this year, and I am here to introduce all of them. I'm back in TOEFOP HQ, I'm sort of wearing clothes, I'm in my pyjamas, kind of. Well, I'm half pyjamas, I was in pyjamas, I made half an effort to get dressed, and I changed from my pyjama top, which is a t-shirt, into a outdoor t-shirt so I could go and get coffee. But I'm essentially in my pyjamas, so hopefully that doesn't influence the read at all. Again, just more professionalism that you're used to when it comes to TOEFOP. If you want to check out these clips visually, you can go to our YouTube channel, TOEFOP TV on YouTube. We are putting up highlights from the show every week on YouTube, as well as full episodes to listen to. And if you want to watch a full episode, you can go to patreon.com/TOEFOP. Sign up for any amount, from a dollar up to whatever, and you can access not only our premium content, but a bunch of other bonus content as well, including the comic strips, Evan Relax, and Quantum Cop. Just a little side note, we are looking to conclude Quantum Cop in the next couple of months. That's right, it is the Chinese democracy of comic strips, but Foz and I have been exchanging emails, working on a script, and Quantum Cop will be winding up soon, so that if that's an incentive to sign up to Patreon, then you should definitely do it. But there's lots of great bonus content up there. We put up a bonus episode every fortnight or so, and every week you can get to see full videos of this show. But enough of my gas bagging, let's get to the clips. Now this first one was regarding the controversy around WAG Nadia Bartel being filmed snorting a mysterious white powder off a Kmart plate, or Target plate, or something like that. Anyway, Will and I get into the ins and outs of the media's favourite term, mysterious white powder. Take it away, us.
For people who don't know who Nadia Bartel is, firstly, well done. But she was, she was famous for becoming, she was a WAG. She was married to a very famous footballer. They had a couple of kids and then they split up, and she's got her own career as an Instagram influencer, in that world. And during the Melbourne lockdown, she was having a party with some friends with some suspicious white powder, unidentified white powder, and somebody accidentally posted it to Instagram. So she did not get, she got busted by the cops for breaking the lockdown protocols. So they got fined whatever the big fine is. It's like $4,000, $5,000 or whatever, each, I think, or whatever it is. So there was punishment for that. But the story was that they didn't charge them for the drugs because they couldn't identify what the white powder was.
That's amazing.
I mean, I guess, that luckily they destroyed all the evidence, I suppose. But isn't that weird? In that conversation, take it away from Nadia Bartel. Say you and I were at a party back in the day, luckily
we just listened to an episode of TOEFOP.
We're just doing the traditional thing. They've cracked us up, so we're racking up. And you got a $3 grab the $3 Kmart plates, and somebody's accidentally posted that to Instagram. Yeah. And the cops come knocking on your door. What happens next? Do you confess to the idea of what it was? Because surely for the cops to say, we can't identify the powder, you've got to do a bit of, oh, we don't know what it was, or
So you're doing the shaggy cops defense? Is it the shaggy defense? Well, it's not, it's more wasn't drugs.
No, it wasn't drugs. It was sherbet. It was whiz-biz.
I think I would be terrible.
Or do you think it's just the cops that don't bother going into this? The cops are like, There are so many people doing this sort of shit. We're not. It's not in our business to, you know, arrest somebody.
I think if it was like a pile of cocaine,
doing a bag of cocaine with their friends.
Yeah, I think from the video, it was like a very small amount of drugs. Mm. And I guess it would be a waste of their time. And, you know, what are they? She's going to get a fine or something like that. But it is weird that, because I always find it funny when they always describe it as a mysterious white powder or a white substance. It's like,
I mean, technically, most of the time when you do buy those sort of drugs, they are a mysterious white powder.
Yeah, I suppose. So it's more
absolutely accurate. Maybe they tested it and it turned out it was just real bad coke and the cops were like, I'm so sorry. You've already been punished. You paid $350 for a bag of like washing powder and Ajax or whatever.
Well, wasn't there another like Jack Watts, the ex-AFL footballer, he was also filmed or photographed or was reported to have been snorting a mysterious powder. And his defense was, oh, it wasn't drugs. It was some other kind of non-illicit thing that I have to snort.
Oh, that's right. Well, I think his was though, wasn't it? Because wasn't he at Oktoberfest? And it was snuff. Right. And it's like quite a famous thing that they do over there. It's like some sort of snuff that they do it. Now, I'm not.
Why doesn't everyone just use that defense? Just call it the Watts defense.
You have to be at Oktoberfest.
Right. Yeah, it was. Well, it was almost October. It was pre-Oktoberfest. That's my defense.
We were having some pre-Oktoberfest drinks and we passed around the snuff plate.
There was a photo came out a couple of years ago that Courtney Cox posted, and it was like all the friends hanging out together, like the first time they'd been photographed together since the show had ended. And some eagle-eyed, you know, people had seen in the very background, there was just like on the coffee table, just like a little pile of white powder, which again, it was the kind of Shaggy defense of like, no, it's not drugs. And it's like, you just happen to have a small pile of white powder on your coffee table at 3 a.m. when you decide it's a good idea to take a photo of you and all your friends.
Splendor. Somebody had just had a coffee. They poured out some Splendor on the table.
Oh, I thought you meant Splendor, the music festival. They'd just come back from Splendor and they'd done all their drugs. And then one of them remembered they had a packet left in their pocket. This next clip is when the listeners, you guys, teabaggers, took it upon yourselves to come up with various slogans to do with TOEFOP relating to your profession. We all know that we have we're the number one medical podcast in Australia, and therefore we keep them laughing so they keep you living. That is our slogan for doctors. But many of you work in different professions. You're not doctors, and so you came up with your own slogans. And if it wasn't slogans for your own profession, it was stuff you imagined for other professions, including being a urologist. So here's a discussion around a TOEFOP slogan for urology. I mean, this is barely anything. He says, I'm not a medical professional, but if I was a urologist. So somebody deals with
if I was. This is a Marvel, you know, what if universe spin-off. I am not a urologist, but if I was, this is what I'd say.
Okay, it doesn't rhyme. Mm-hmm. It's more to do with a crude metaphor for laughter.
Yeah, so they keep taking the piss so people don't piss themselves or something like that.
Something like that. When you are laughing uncontrollably, you are...
You piss yourself?
Yeah.
Pissing yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they keep you...
Not pissing yourself.
No, I think a urologist wants you to piss yourself.
Oh, do they?
We keep you pissing yourself, so you keep them pissing
they keep us pissing ourselves, so we keep them pissing themselves.
This gets very confusing. No, it's we keep you pissing yourself. We're talking to the urologist. Yeah. Remember, this is our slogan. Okay. Hey, urologist, we keep you pissing yourselves, so you keep them pissing themselves.
Okay, that's clever now that you've said it like that.
Is
that it? It does work.
Is it?
We keep you, urologist. We put the you in urologist. Hey, urologist, we keep you pissing yourselves, so you keep them
pissing themselves.
No, because you don't want them to piss themselves.
You're terrible urologist.
You want them to stop pissing themselves, I imagine. Like, if you're pissing yourself, you would go to a urologist and say, what's going on? And the urologist would be like, I will stop you from pissing yourself.
I think maybe the profession is the confusing part. If it was a pathologist and you need someone to give a urine sample, you'd be like, keep me pissing myself so I can keep them. But pissing...
This is the problem with speculating on other people's industries. Like, if this was an actual urologist, he would have nailed this because he knows what the job is, whereas this person does not know what the job of the urologist is.
Yeah, kind of like when we talk about entertaining people, like if we genuinely knew what we were doing.
All right. I think that with a urologist, I imagine that, like, sometimes you want people to, like, you might be dealing with a blockage or whatever that you want people to be able to piss again, but you still don't want them to piss themselves. I can't imagine the end result for a urologist that their target is for anyone to ever piss themselves.
I mean, I wonder...
To piss, sure, yeah, but not to piss themselves.
Because that suggests you're wetting your pants. I mean, I guess how could we improve it? It's something along the lines of we keep you hissing so they keep on pissing, or we give you a comedy glow so they get a yellow flow.
That's good. That's not bad. Steady yellow flow, I think.
A steady yellow flow.
Or like, we are piss funny, so they don't piss funny.
We love hip-hop here at Tofop HQ, and we love our workwear. That's a terrible segue to introduce this next clip, in which Will and I realize that there is quite a number of similarities between Australian workwear brands and rap crews in terms of naming and credibility. So without any further ado, here is Workwear or Rap Crew. What other kind of blue-collar labels could do a tie-in with Aussie hip-hop?
Well, I mean...
Sweat Hog?
G?
That G sounds like a rapper.
Sounds like a rapper, right? If there was a new rapper called King G, you'd be like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense.
I'm a dope-ass MC. My name is King G.
King G. All the other MCs are wearing me.
What else is there? This is great. I like this game. Okay, so you got... Well, could you go like... I don't know if this is blue collar, but you know, a lot of tradies get their gear from Best and Less. Like you'll find a lot of high vis vests and like, you know, cheap Explorer socks and stuff from Best and Less.
Yeah, I reckon Best and Less. I mean, I reckon that's like a salt and pepper style two piece.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm best and I'm less. And together we're best and less.
And I wonder if you kind of spell it differently. So like M&M, it's not actually how it sounds. You spell it differently.
Oh, no, just with dollar signs.
Oh yeah, or B dollar sign T and L double dollar sign.
Yeah, that's right.
The Blue Collar Crew. Shit, that's their collective, the Blue Collar Crew.
Oh yes, exactly. So yeah, it's a whole range of blue collar rappers and they come together in the Blue Collar Crew. Yeah, I love it.
All right, actually, let's sell it to someone. If you ever want to go down... A YouTube rabbit hole. If I can't remember what I searched for, but a mate of mine sent me this link to, there's a lot of like, you know, I guess non-professional Aussie hip hop guys who like to put music videos out on YouTube and stuff. And so a mate of mine sent me a bunch once and they're fantastic. But there was one by this group who I believe were bouncers. They worked at Revolver or they worked at a bunch of Melbourne clubs like Revolver and strip clubs and stuff, and they had a hip-hop collective called Bouncers or The Bouncers, I can't remember which, but they had at least three or four videos online and it was like, oh, this is the Blue Collar Crew. Like it was all about, I mean, they were called The Bouncers and the songs were all about being a bouncer, what it's like working on the door at Revolver, which seems to be really enjoying a fight, just loving, just waiting for someone to pick a fight with you.
All I'm going to say is all the names, I've just Googled Australian workwear brands and all of the names of the workwear brands sound like rap crews.
Okay.
That's what I've actually worked out now. So we've got King G, absolutely. Yep. Hard Yakka, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bisley Workwear.
What?
Like, if I saw a rapper called Bisley Workwear, I'd be like, yeah, man, have you heard the new Bisley Workwear?
But work is spelled W-E-R-K.
Yeah. And Bisley would be spelt B-Z-L dollar sign.
Just throw a dollar sign in there.
DNC Workwear. You down with DNC? Yeah, you know me.
You know me.
And this is my favorite. Seismic. S-Y-Z-M-I-K.
Already spelt like a hip hop artist. That's amazing. Now, it wouldn't be an episode of Tofop without some discussion around Batman. Robert Pattinson is due to make his debut, his debut as Batman real soon. And so Will and I discussed the latest trailer, which I don't even know. By the time you hear this, there's probably been another bunch of trailers released. But when we recorded this, it was a few months ago. It was the new trailer then. And so we discussed what we think of the trailer and Robert Pattinson.
Yes, I did watch the Batman trailer. In fact, I watched it just before we came on to do this podcast, just in case we wanted to talk about it. What were your initial thoughts? Are you excited about the idea of a new Batman movie?
No. Like, it's funny. I watched it this morning and then I showed it to Jem. Well, my first thoughts were like, this looks like Seven. This looks like if David Fincher in 1996 had made a Batman movie, I imagine this is what he would have made. Which is fine. Like, I like Nirvana. I like David Fincher. All the references are fine. But I showed it to Jem, and I think she summed up how I felt. She was like, oh, yeah, it would be great if this was for an original idea.
Right.
I think that's the kind of point. Is that it all had all the bells and whistles and stuff, but I was not excited by it. I felt like seen it before. In the same way that Joker felt like it was, let's take all the best bits from those 70s kind of films, Scorsese films. This feels like, oh, let's take all the best bit from the late 90s and we'll make that. My other issue is Robert Pattinson as Batman, which seems crazy because my issue with him is I don't find him intimidating in the slightest. And it's crazy because like Michael Keaton was Batman and, you know, he was Mr. Mum. Yet somehow I think that, oh no, I can sort of buy him being crazy enough to wear a bat suit. But I don't know, there's something about him that I'm like, I can't see him being unhinged. Christian Bale, 100%. Could see him being unhinged. Ben Affleck, yeah, he looks like a roided out Batman bro. But I'm just not buying the Batten Bat.
Yeah, like you look at a guy who played a vampire famously in a whole bunch of movies and go, I just can't associate with him with bats in any way, this man. I know what you mean, but you haven't seen Tenet, right?
No, I haven't seen Tenet.
He's so good in Tenet, not playing an intimidatory character, but just like so good in that movie that it makes you think he could do anything. Like it's one of those performances where you're like, yeah, I just want to see what you do with this because I now think you're a really good actor.
I think he's a good actor. I've seen him in stuff that I really like The Rover and stuff. But it's just more, I don't know. This, I think, to play Batman, you either seem to have to be unhinged, like, you know, George Clooney and Val Kilmer aside, you got to have that kind of crazy that Michael Keaton has, or you've got to have that intensity that Christian Bale has, and I don't know. I haven't seen that in Robert Pattinson. I think
we haven't seen it in this trailer.
That's true.
Right? I don't think that, like, I think he could play both of those things, but there's nothing from these the teaser and the trailer to indicate, like, they didn't show us enough of that or any of that really. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you see a little of him being deranged, you know, kind of like screaming at whoever you assume is maybe the Riddler through the, like, the screen or whatever. Like, you know, there's moments where you're like, oh yeah, that's like him being like deranged Batman, but you don't see, you know, any of that enigmatic side or whatever that other side would necessarily
obsessive
be of him.
Kind of. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the other thing I would say, and I did put something on Twitter, is there's a scene which is great for a trailer where he's coming down the hallway and there's two guys with machine guns and they're just like blasting him with machine guns and he takes them out. And I'm like, part of the appeal of Batman is that he's not superpowered, you know, that he's had to hone his body and train his ninjutsu skills to a point where he can outsmart and use stealth and he can be brutal when he wants to, but he's not going to walk headfirst into gunfire. That seems like a real dumb approach. And if you give him this like bulletproof suit, then I don't know. I think you take away a very compelling element of Batman.
Okay, so here's what I would say about that. I don't have as much of a problem with the suit because he's always had various forms of armor, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely agree with you on his tactics.
Yeah.
But, because, like, how does he know they're not going to shoot him in the face?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have, like, a Ned Kelly hat on, like, right? Yeah. So you're absolutely correct. Like, yes, he's got body armor on, but the way that he's going down that corridor is as if he's impervious to being shot. Whereas if they just aimed up about 10 centimeters, they would have murdered Batman and that's the end of the movie.
And you could also understand if he was walking straight at them and they were firing like single shot revolver or a handgun, but they're spraying wildly with a machine gun.
Could have your eye out on a ricochet, Batman.
Just drenching. Because there's a similar scene in The Dark Knight Rises where he, and it doesn't attack.
I mean, even put your arm armor up in front of your eyes at the very least, you know?
I mean, look, I was watching it on my iPhone. Maybe he was, but I couldn't make it out that well. But there's that scene in The Dark Knight Rises where they're in the going into Bane's lair with him and Catwoman. And he does that weird sort of like zigzaggy thing where he's hard to shoot. And it's like, well, that makes sense. He's a ninja. He sticks to the shadows. He's going to make it hard for you to hit him. But this one was kind of like, come at me, bro. Like, I'm just going to walk. I'm going to walk like just headlong into...
Face first. Unprotected face first. Beautiful, unprotected face first.
If you're a regular listener to TOEFOP, you know that I've spent quite a bit of time in Queensland this year, specifically on the Gold Coast. And one of the things that happens in the Southern Gold Coast on a Sunday night is a drum circle and fire twirling. And so this next clip is me talking Will through my last visit to the drum circle and a realization that maybe I'm a cop. I mean, I even went out last night. We had a couple of friends come down from Brisbane, and in the Southern Gold Coast on a Sunday night, there is a drum circle that happens every Sunday night, like traditional old school barefoot hippie drum circle where like what there's two, I wouldn't say stages because it's just set up in the park, but there's two ring lights set up. So arenas, one is for fire twirling and one is for drum circling. So the drum circle is probably about, I'd say between 20 and 30 drummers and then probably anywhere between 30 and 60 dancers in the drum circle. So often on a Sunday, we'll take Iona down to the beach, you know, we'll maybe get some fish and chips down there. Then as the sun goes down, the drum circle starts up, we'll go watch the drum circle. Now, here's what I'll say about drum circles is, and come at me, drum circle aficionados, because I feel like you're saying
they can't
drum
come
circle
at you. They can surround you. That's what they're very good at.
But I feel like you've seen one drum circle.
Yeah.
You've seen them all.
Seen
because
them all.
I guess there is some kind of, and I am fully claiming ignorance. I don't know culturally where they originated. I don't know if it's specific to like South America or the African continent or whatever it is. But, you know, the idea is everyone just gets together and just creates a giant rhythm and then everyone feels the rhythm and they all start dancing. And occasionally a dude with white dreadlocks will lead a chant. That's the thing that happens in this drum circle.
Yeah.
So I feel it may
not be representative of all drum circles around the world. There may be culturally appropriate drum circles. You're just describing this particular brand of drum circle.
Well, I did think that maybe there was like a giant amount of cultural appropriation going on. But then the more I've mingled in this drum circle, the more I've realized there are people from all kind of countries and backgrounds coming here. So I'm thinking that maybe it is like a intercontinental tradition that this kind of conservative, scared, middle-aged white man doesn't understand.
It's primitive. It's primal. It's about rhythm and getting in a circle and communing with other people and just like feeling it, feeling connected to each other and
that's
feeling connected to the planet Earth. And like, you know, it's like, it's instinctive. Like I see that. Like the circle has always throughout like the stories that we've told each other, like signified, you know, like let the circle be complete. Like the wheel revolutionized what we are as human beings. We live on a globe, like circles and seeing things in full circles, the season coming around, like, you know, the passing of the years, all these sort of things. Our clocks are represented as circles. You know, we look at the passage of time in a circle. So I get the power of a circle. Like, I think circles, just by the very nature of them, if I see a whole bunch of people in a circle, I'm like, what's going on over here? Why have they got that biscuit in the middle? That's horrible. It's horrible.
But you're right. It's the power of the circle, because I was standing there watching all these people dancing with abandon, barefoot in the dirt, you know, feeling the rhythm and stuff. And I was, could not switch off the cynical part of my brain. Like, I couldn't switch off like the judgmental, cynical part of my brain. And so then I was like, well, why don't I turn this high-powered cynicism on myself and start judging me? Like, why is it that I have to hate a good time? Why can't I allow these people? Why am I? Because I was watching it going, oh, it's so try hard. And what is all this shit? And like, are people actually coming down here because for the to feel the rhythm and something primal? Or is it to hook up and smoke weed and all that
Who
kind
cares?
Of stuff? And
then they're all good.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, well, that's right. That's where I was getting to. And so I was having all these thoughts, and because there's been a couple of times where, you know, someone in the drum circle has like, hey, you know, why don't you come join in? And I'm always like, no. Gemma's joined in. Iona's joined in. She's like got her dirty feet. But I've always been like, I'm too self-conscious and I don't know. Like, I think I'd just be judging myself the whole time. And I love to dance. Don't get me wrong. I love to cut a rug. If you invite me to your wedding, I will dance. I will dance the fandango. But there's something about this kind of dancing that I was like, it's almost like, it's like when I went to uni and did my arts course, and it was like an arts campus, and everyone was much more blue haired and nose ringed than I was. And I remember, like, you know, when I was doing these courses, these photography courses and film courses and stuff, that I felt like I wasn't cool enough. Like, my references weren't cool enough. My language wasn't cool enough.
You've always presented as an undercover cop.
Square as square could be.
Yeah. No, but like, not square. You're not a square. You look like an undercover cop. Like, you look like a guy who's like very cool adjacent. Like, they've got together in the police station and gone, this guy needs to infiltrate these group of people, dress him in what cops think these people are wearing and what talking about. You know what I mean? Wrestling. I bet they're into wrestling. Talk about wrestling heaps.
So it's funny you should say that. Because, so I'm watching this, like, you know, these people dancing with abandon and, you know, the fire twirlers, you know, twirling their things around and having this conflict and not joining in, while everyone else either observing or participating seemed to be enjoying the spirit of what was going on. The only other people who were standing next to me staring on, judging?
Cops.
There was four uniformed and two plainclothes officers standing about 10 feet from me, having exactly this. Well, I'm sure they're having different kind of thoughts. So I'm probably trying to see if anyone's like smoking weed or whatever it is. But I was just like, oh my God, I'm a cop. Yeah. I'm a goddamn cop.
You're an undercover cop. They probably nodded at you. They probably gave you a wink. They knew you were on the job.
We love getting letters from you guys, and sometimes they're unexpected, like this one from a teenage listener who started listening to Tofop way too young, in my opinion, at the age of 13. I'm not sure if he meant to slight us with some of the things he wrote in his email, but I did feel slighted. But at the same time, well, we got cut through to that young bloody zillennial demographic when he's got a disposable income. Don't you worry. Uncle Charlie's going to come calling to sell him some merchandise. Because... That's what you need to be cool at university, is some Tofop merchandise. Don't do it. Teenage listener who wrote in, don't do it. Anyway, here's the clip. I started listening to Tofop 3 years ago when I was 13, and I've enjoyed every episode.
Okay.
It does suck as a 16-year-old now with mates that don't listen to podcasts that I can't talk to them about a podcast with two middle-aged men who discuss their bin issues and abnormally enthusiastic interest in The Rock.
I mean, can you imagine having to explain that to 16-year-old friends?
I mean, like, what would have been the equivalent when we're in high school? So, so if he was 16, so we are, what, 30, more than 30, 35 years older than him.
Yeah.
So when you and I were at high school, would that have been Monty Python? How old's John Cleese? He'd be 70-something.
I believe we're exactly like Monty Python.
Okay, but a shit version of Monty Python.
Yeah, Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Yeah, okay. But even though, but at high school, all your mates love Kevin Bloody Wilson. Like,
but it is, I think that this could be something because it is adults. Like, we're people your parents, like, I mean.
Yeah.
Like, we're your parents' age. Like, I imagine that Oliver's parents are probably the same age as I am, right? Like, because I'm 47. What's he? Like, 16 years old. So that means, like, if they were 30 in their, like, 30s when they have, so of the same generation, right? So for him, this is like, imagine, like, tuning into a podcast and hearing people your parents' age talk the fucking nonsense that we talk.
I mean, I guess, like, there were mates of mine who did not like Monty Python, who thought it was just dumb old people shit. Or, like, you know what it would be like? The Goon Show. Mm. The Goon Show was just a bit too far removed for me to get. Like, I know that my dad and his mates liked it. And I could see the kind of seeds of, oh, yeah, this is meant to be funny, but I don't get it because it's old men doing funny voices and
but
shit.
But even at my school, like things like The Big Gig and like the Doug Anthony All-Stars and that style of comedy was only a kind of niche comedy in the schoolyard. Like the Comedy Company and Fast Forward and like
that these was the big mainstream sort of stuff.
Your mainstream. That's what everybody was into. Like to be into those ABC shows or those ABC acts was still
it's true.
It was kind of a bit niche and nerdy, you know.
I guess like the majority of my mates weren't watching The Money or The Gun when I was at high school.
Even The Late Show. We all remember The Late Show as being this like really popular show, but it's only really popular between like all of our friends because it affected us all so much and made us want to do what we do. But
wasn't that mainstream popular?
No, it only had two seasons because it wasn't popular. It didn't do that well.
Is that right?
Yeah, but it was fucking like that hell, first, what they say about that first Lou Reed album, what's his band called?
The Velvet Underground.
So the first album, like sold 50 copies or whatever when it came out, but like that everyone who bought a copy went and started a band or whatever the thing they say is. And like that was what The Late Show, I mean, it became more popular in its sort of legend and as people discovered it on like video and all those sort of things. But, you know, it was only a two season show.
My older brother, who also listens to this show, and myself often talk about TOEFOP and TOEFOP stories at the dinner table, which leaves my parents slightly confused, but interested.
Okay.
Charlie's old man experiences are usually talked about and has led my brother, my mum, and myself to conclude that Charlie is very similar to my dad.
Okay. There you go.
Which makes sense. In recent years, Dad has had issues with the neighbours, which has led to him doing some pretty Charlie-ish things. But like putting some brightly painted tree stumps on our front verge to stop the neighbours from driving on the verge garden. My mum remarks, Charlie sounds just like your dad. With Dad replying, I can totally understand why this Charlie did that. I love Two Guys, One Cup. Your footy knowledge or lack thereof is amusing and sometimes cringeworthy.
That sounds about right.
I'm getting schooled by a 16-year-old.
They tell it like it is, the kids.
They do. I'm trying hard not to flex on Charlie here. But I'm an Eagles supporter and I've already seen two premierships in my lifetime. Oh, it's an amazing feeling to witness your team win a premiership. No, you haven't seen... Oh, he has.
Yeah.
One was, hey, buddy... Bullshit. The first flag was when you were born. That doesn't count. You have not seen two flags in your lifetime. You can't count that. In the first 6 years, doesn't count.
I mean, you're still alive and you can watch the replay.
Yeah, but... You didn't live through the season. It's an amazing feeling to witness your team win a premiership. Oh, fuck off. I'm getting pissed off, Oliver. I do sympathize with you, Charlie. And I hope that you might experience that feeling one day.
One day.
Well, great. The 16-year-old is bloody trying to make me feel better.
He's patronising you. You're being patronised by a 16-year-old.
He's going to call me a city boy very soon.
Where'd you
During lockdown last year, I started listening to FOFOP from the start and then the earlier TOEFOP episodes, which has been a real eye-opener in terms of what 30-something-year-old men like to discuss occasionally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the great content. You guys have always made me laugh and I truly appreciate the work you do to release such entertaining stuff. I recently became a Patreon subscriber because I realized that the pod is worth paying for.
You know what? We're getting a little pocket money.
A little pocket money. He's, you know, collecting trolleys at his local Woolies and we're bloody dipping our beaks.
For Patreon. I appreciate
his
that.
His mum is like, can you please save for a car or to put yourself through uni? He's like, nope.
No, I have a podcast to want to support. Men.
This is a fairly recent highlight from the show, but it seemed to capture the imagination of quite a few of you. We did a Halloween episode where I went onto Reddit, went to a supernatural subreddit to be specific, and just read out stories to Will from people who had had supernatural experiences, including this one person who had a Bigfoot encounter, but different to any other Bigfoot encounter I've ever heard of. It's probably best if I just leave it to me in the past to explain. Take it away, Charlie in the past. A man reported seeing a Bigfoot-like figure on three glowing or metallic red balls hovering over the freeway about 75 yards in the air. The witness slowed his vehicle to about 10 miles an hour to get a better view when the figure began to fly north across a wheat field. Okay, so just let's just pause there. So a Bigfoot.
Run me through it again. So run me through what you think's happening here.
A Bigfoot sitting on three glowing or metallic red balls is hovering above a freeway about 75 yards in the air. A witness
unlikely, I would say. Unlikely. Unlikely that this Reddit forum is the first time we're hearing about this, if it indeed happened.
A witness has seen this Bigfoot, this, you know, generally, if you're unfamiliar with what a Bigfoot looks like, because there is an artist impression, it's a giant gorilla, an upright gorilla.
Okay.
And it's sitting on three red balls, like the balls that David Bowie plays with in Labyrinth, you know, the but they're red and metallic.
So they're stacked end on end?
No, in a triangle.
Okay.
In a triangle, and he's sitting on top of the triangle.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Not stacked. Do you know what I mean? They're arranged in a triangle. If they're flat on a pool table, they're just one, two, three, flat on the
table. Okay. But he's sitting sort of what? On one of them or in the middle
In the middle of all three. In the apex or the vortex. Adam Spencer's going to fucking come at me for getting apex and vortex wrong because I feel like that's his great pleasure now is fact checking me. My inability to fucking calculate dates and leap years and shit like that. So have at it, Spence. That one's just for you. I don't know what a vortex or an apex is. Okay, so the witness sees it drifting across a wheat field. I would like to know what pace it was drifting. What does it say? He slowed his vehicle to about 10 miles per hour to get a better view. It doesn't say how fast the Sasquatch is floating. He could only see the back of the creature, and it was solid black with what appeared to be a suit or a hairy cloak sitting on appeared to be three spheres connected together. These large round ball shaped objects had a candy apple metallic glow to them. Shocked, he pulled over. Do you reckon this is the same guy who took the ayahuasca?
You should not take ayahuasca and drive. That's the message. Shocked, I pulled over, watched a short video for Amazon, and then got straight back to the Bigfoot on the balls.
You know, that's the last thing you want is a Bigfoot on your balls.
I mean, this, even just the, like I've never heard of the idea of a Bigfoot floating around on giant balls. This feels like a whole brand new twist to the mythology of your Bigfoot. Your Bigfoot is traditionally lingering mysteriously in the woods, right?
Yeah, it feels like they have merged two mythologies. So there is a thing called orbs. Have you heard about orbs?
No.
Some people report glowing orbs, so they'll post videos and it's like a ball of light that appears, you know, and flicks around and disappears. Oh, yeah.
The sun? Are you talking about the sun?
No, generally, like, it'll happen indoors. It looks like it's just like a trick of light is playing on a camera lens or something like that. But there's people who believe they're spirits or something supernatural. So it feels like someone has taken ayahuasca and merged their love of Bigfoot with their love of orb mythology. I've never heard them being red and apple metallic. Okay, this is where it gets weird. Shocked, the driver pulled over and he could see what appeared to be a dead dog, possibly a black and white Sheltie, hanging to the left side of the vehicle from a rope. So Bigfoot is just floating along on his orbs and he's maybe caught himself some lunch. And he's hanging that lunch from the side of his orbs.
So he's like fishing or something. He's been floating around on his orb with a fishing line picking up dogs. Is that?
The artist impression is, it looks like that. He's been hunting and he's caught this dog and now it's bound to him. This is like a low rent version of the Jeepers Creepers monster. This is what it feels like. You know, for 30 days.
Is there a chance that maybe he just forgot he has a dog and he just forgot it was tied up to the balls when he took it off?
Oh, no, like vacation, National Lampoon's vacation. That'd be awful. Okay, possibly. I mean, if the Bigfoot was drunk, if the Bigfoot had taken ayahuasca.
Why not? I mean, let's combine them all.
Yeah. The figure then flew across the field towards Smith Road, where the witness jumped into his car and sped northeast on Sapley Road, where he turned and proceeded to speed at around 70 miles an hour towards Smith Road. I'm confused by that. He got there, turned left, cutting the figure off so he could see it better. At this point, he realized, the Sasquatch realized the witness was following it and turned around. and flew in a more westerly direction. The driver could not get in a position to see it again after that.
Unlikely. I'm just going to stick with unlikely. That now, that some... just doesn't even follow any sort of narrative or logic at all.
Someone earnestly tells you that story, like someone that you trust, someone like who's a no-nonsense friend of ours.
I think the sentence that you're actually meant to be saying is someone that I used to trust and I'm now suspicious about.
But honestly, what is your first thought is like, is it mental illness? Is it drugs or alcohol? Like you go to the logical conclusions first, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, here's what I will say. People see things, and when you see things with your own eyes, regardless of whether they might be, like you said, a trick of the light or like, you know, there are a myriad of natural and scientific explanations for things that every day that we dismiss as being supernatural. So my immediate thought process would be, yes, something mysterious happened. I'm not sure exactly what it was that was mysterious that you saw. But I would doubt that it was a Sasquatch on three glowing apple balls floating through the field with a dead dog hanging from it that somehow was unobservant enough to not notice that you were trying to chase it down until you finally got there.
But it's so specific. It's so specific. You know, generally when people make stuff up, like they borrow off what's in popular culture. I mean, that I've never heard anything like that.
So, it's a mashup, though. It's just a mashup. Yeah, it's not like it's introduced a whole bunch of new elements. And just because no one's ever said it before doesn't mean that it must be true. In fact, by the very scientific method and logic, it might indicate that if nobody's ever witnessed it before, then the likelihood that it isn't true and that it's just explained by something else, right?
Yeah. I mean,
I am a real Halloween sport, by the way, guys.
Thank you for sticking with us through this compilation episode, this best of TOEFOP. We're almost at the end, only one clip to go. And I think it's quite appropriate that it finishes with another story about me almost hurting myself when I decided to do a bit of gardening. As you know, if you're a keen listener to TOEFOP, I don't take a lot of advice on gardening very well. I've had professional gardeners and horticulturalists come around and I'll dismiss their advice until inevitably they're proven right. Just see the grass grubs episode from earlier this year. Or was it last year? I can't even remember. But anyway, this story relates to me trimming some ivy from my house only to find out that it might have been poisonous. And I won't sign off after the clip, so let me just say goodbye now. Thank you for sticking with this. Hopefully we'll be back on deck sooner rather than later. And remember to support us at patreon.com/TOEFOP. Go to TOEFOP TV to check out all these clips you've heard. They're all available as video clips on YouTube. And is there anything else to promote? No, I think that's it. The other thing I had to tend to was the garden. Spring is in full bloom and we have this lovely wisteria that sort of like grows over the front of the house, which had gone a bit wild. And so I just, without thinking, I just grabbed the secateurs. What are they called? Come on.
Secateurs.
The garden scissors.
Not secateurs. That's like the three secateurs. That's like a
knockoff brand of.
Yeah, secateurs. Now that you've said it all those ways, I actually cannot say it.
Podcast Mike, can you just Google the correct pronunciation of
secateurs? How do you even spell it? What would your guess be? Like, let's guess at how you spell secateurs.
All right, I'll go first. All right, secateurs. A-S-S-S. UTIERS.
UTI? Okay.
You do it. Guess.
I have no idea how you spell
secateurs. Oh, is it secateurs? It's an S-C-S-S-C-E-C. I don't know. I mean.
Okay, here we go.
Mike's. Oh, we got it?
Mike goes, it's S-E-K-A-T-E-R-E-S.
Secateurs. All right. So I busted out the secateurs and I hit this wisteria. And Iona came out to give Dad a hand. And so I was up the ladder cutting down the loose vines and dropping them on the ground, and she was putting them into a pile for me. And Gemma came out and she's like, is that safe? Like, is that fine? And I'm like, yeah, of course it is. Like, why would anyone hang wisteria all over the front of the house in the doorway if it was poisonous? So Jim goes back in the house, comes out 2 minutes later and says, yeah, apparently it's very poisonous.
Yeah, deadly. Deadly, like, poisonous.
If you ingest it, it can be fatal. Yeah. Even through the skin, you can absorb it, can cause like a rash or whatever. And I was so, it was like the grass grubs all over again, where I was so convinced, having no horticultural experience in my life, just silence. You know what I was like? I was like a dude who looked at the coronavirus and was like, I reckon it's not that bad.
It's just like a common cold, isn't it? Like this wisteria is just like any other plant that won't kill you if you eat it.
It's green. It looks like buffalo grass. It looks like
why would they grow it outdoors if it was poisonous? It makes no sense.
And so I did. So I trimmed it all, and I wasn't wearing gloves or anything. So I only went inside. Gemma gave her a good scrub down, and I was still maintaining that it wasn't that bad, because I checked out the Wikipedia entry as well, and it was like, you know, generally it's the seeds. If you eat the seeds or part of the plant, that can be when it's really, it shouldn't be ingested, but can cause rash, diarrhea, you know, rash, dizziness, all this kind of stuff. And then I spent the rest of that night like a character from The Thing, just paranoid that the wisteria had got into my bloodstream. Like I was sort of feeling a bit not right. And I'm like, oh. Is that is it got in my bloodstream? Is this it? Am I going to die? Like if I, and the conversation I was having in my head was, I will not admit to Gemma that I was sick. Like,
that's why you die. It'd be extremely treatable if you actually just went and got medical attention, but you refuse to ask for said medical attention because you want to prove a point.
Yeah. Well, I even when she showed me the page entry, I was like, oh yeah, but it says ingested, it's poisonous. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine, you know. And I have cut that wisteria in the past and not noticed any discomfort, but I'd cut a lot more this time because it was so overgrown. And I was sitting there getting like stomach pains and feeling every little itch on my arm. I'm like, oh my God, here it comes. And then in my head, I'm like, how do I take the car to get to the hospital without her knowing? Like, do I have to wait till she goes to sleep?
Good.
And then
good plan.
Put the car into neutral and roll it down the driveway so she doesn't hear me leave. Get to the hospital, get whatever treatment I need, come back and slide back into bed without her knowing.
Yeah. I mean, without her knowing is a generous interpretation of how that would go.
Yeah.
I feel like she would find out at some stage and call you and be like, where the fuck are you? And you'd be like, I'm at the hospital. I'm worried that I'm dying in a mysterious way. And I've checked myself in. They're pumping my blood.